My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Mystical Ninja starring Goemon, or Mystical Ninja 64. I think it's clearer, which is an action RPG.
Most of the Mystical Ninja games star Goemon.
Yeah, it's kind of their thing.
Yeah.
You mean Kid Gang.
Yeah. Yes.
Or Kid Yang. Yeah. It's an action RPG developed and published by Konami for the Nintendo 64 in 1998 here in America.
Yeah. And this episode is executive produced by Christian. Thank you, Christian.
Thank you
very much. Appreciate you.
Blast from my past.
I had played the Super Nintendo incarnation of this that came to the States. Mm-hmm. I hadn't played this one. I thought I had.
Okay.
Yeah. And for me, like, just get it out there. To me, this is good, fine, like fine, good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's somewhere in there. It's like a solid B minus, you know?
Oh yeah.
It's fine.
No, this is like, a seven. This is like in the 7 out of 10, you know, classic zone. Classics, yes. Of 7 out of 10.
It is a classic out of 7 out of 10, a classic out of 10. It's fine. Like, nothing this does is upsetting. And then you know, like there's minor nitpicks to play, you know, mechanically, but nothing too big. Mm-hmm. It like plays fun enough. It is a weird, it sent me down a real existential rabbit hole, about, you know, cause you want to avoid. So like, there's a thing in Westerners reacting to Japanese media that you are not meant to, and it is bad to be like, lol, wacky Japan.
Right.
Like, that's not good. That's not a good feedback thing. No. You know, I don't know how to describe this other than that, though. Like, it's it, part of it's translation and part of it is like wordplay and stuff that just doesn't get across. Mm-hmm. It just comes off as that to me in a lot of ways. Like, I there are parts of it I think are cool, and there are parts of it that I think are like smile out loud halfway kind of charming.
Yeah,
but it's funny. It's supposed to be funny. It's a comedy, and I don't get the jokes. And I don't get why things are happening in it.
Right.
And I think that's a big appeal for some folk. And I get that. I just don't know how to talk about it because I don't want to sound racist. Right. And that's tricky for me.
Yeah. So I think that something that it gets around the like, oh, this is lol, random Japan, you know, just something that flattens so much culture to that is that this is trying to be funny. Like, this is a comedy product.
Yes.
You know, is the like is the way of it. It's also a comedy product that is aimed at children. Like, something that like Konami did in marketing this was like made, you know, went out and had schools like make Goemon their mascot for like martial arts classes.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah.
So it's comedy, children's comedy from another culture run through a translation.
Yeah.
And it's, I think to me that is a really understandable thing not to get. You know, like in terms of cultural understanding, humor is at the top. Like, like when I say a rabbit hole, like I spent a lot of time just like, tell me about Japanese humor. Like, tell me what's going on. I learned a lot. And there's a lot of stuff that's like super funny and shit. You know, it was very enlightening for me. I certainly had a misconception about like a prevalence of slapstick and such in Japanese humor. And a lot of times that is because that's what translates because these things don't translate. And then I also had a real revelation of being like, these are wordplay and cultural things that I don't understand. That just has to be okay. You know, it's not problematic for me not to find this funny.
Right.
I really 2023'd myself into a fucking ditch.
I think what's important is that you went and like did work to like look and see like, hey, what's the actually if you were just incurious about it and said this sucks because I don't get it, I think that would be I'm not here to give anybody pats on the back or whatever. To me, that seems like a constructive way to approach this.
I just ended up in the same place. I learned more about the forum and then just ended up in a place where like, man, that's not funny. That just happened for no reason. There's no joke there.
Here's the thing. Nobody has educated themselves into thinking a joke is funny.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. It's a weird thing. So it just ended up being like, I know this is the cadence of comedy. Mm-hmm. Like, and people online talk about this game as if it's very funny, and I can't separate it out from people who are just doing lol random Japan. You know, they're taking it on a very surface level, and they just think it's wacky because it's extremely unpredictable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all, you know, Simpsons, like watching unpredictable Mexican sitcoms you know, because you don't understand the context. It's one of those things. Even if it did ultimately end up with me letting myself off the hook for it, like I spent like two straight evenings watching YouTube explainers of like different comedy forms, you know, because it's really, really interesting. It was more interesting to me than playing this game, which I think is kind of a mid. It was fascinating. So that's my long way of saying we're going to talk about a comedy game that I am culturally incapable of understanding the jokes of. And that's a weird thing to talk about, because there's so little for the action. Like, the action's very basic. Some of it's pretty good, but it's real basic.
So I'm coming at this from the other side, where like I think we're running into a number of things that are like not fungible, you know, which makes this difficult to talk about, which is like, this doesn't land for you because you do not have the context for it. And or, you know, just it's from a different culture, and the weight of responsibility for like meeting this is not entirely on you. For me, I played both of these games very young and was enchanted with them because like they were one of my first glimpses at something that was unapologetically Japanese.
Yes.
Right. Like a lot of stuff, like look at the NES era, how many things when they were localized, you know, they took great pains to try and hide the fact that this came from or was about Japan. Right.
Sure.
And for me as a young kid, you know, getting that infatuation, you know, with the Japan and just kind of the signifiers of that culture. Right. That said, like, nothing in this is laugh out loud funny, but it is smile out loud, and it hits all of these nostalgia kind of triggers for me and is charming, another non-fungible thing, just like nostalgia is non-fungible, to where this game just kind of like, it's real dorky mid humor is kind of a warm blanket for me, like going around and talking to each of the townspeople and having them like have a little non sequitur that they say. Like, but that is not something that I can like critically expound upon in a way that makes somebody else feel it.
No, there's nothing to say about it.
Yeah.
It makes it impossible to talk about. I'd also say that like what I got wrapped around the axle, and I'm not saying this to umpire your disc or anything, but I was like, is this unapologetically Japanese when one, this is representative of a very, very small subset. I like the humor, and two, a lot of it is just literally bad translation stuff that would be jokes. Like, finding the line about what of this is actually representative of Japanese culture versus just being, you know, oh, that's a pun that would probably work if it weren't translated poorly.
When I say,
you know, that's wordplay, you know?
When I say unapologetically Japanese, I'm not really talking about like the structure or like the content of the comedy of this. I'm talking about like both this and the SNES game, like not trying to hide that they are set in and about Japan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's a steez.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, like a real, you know, fact of the matter, PC games had been very, very funny for a long time. By the time the first Mystical Ninja came out, right? I was a little console kid. You know, the only PC game that I really played up until the point where I played the SNES version, I mean, and even like kind of edging into the N64 version, like not a lot of console games were like really even trying to be funny.
You weren't getting your Space Quests and your Monkey Islands and shit like that.
And so like the, you know, these might have been some of the first like comedy games that I had played, and, you know, again, non-fungible, like the order in which you hit something. People were, you know, laughing out loud at the, you know, Monkey Island 2, and I'm, you know, playing this. That's probably an experience for a lot of people. It's probably kind of similar to people who were not exposed either to like quirky translated comedy or like funny games that were intentionally made to be funny until they played Earthbound and then fucking knocked their socks off, right?
Yeah, and that's probably, you know, that Earthbound's a good game. Earthbound's a great game, but it's mm-hmm. also that it has a huge reputation. That's probably a part of it.
Yes.
You know, what it all comes down to is like a thing that makes this has been a thing for this, you know, a lot of games this month, right? For me, mm-hmm. where figuring out that these are hard to apply craft to. Like those elements you're talking about, the non-fungibleness comes hand in hand with a difficult to talk about critically mm-hmm. kind of thing in a way that is what the show is. You know, and I'm not saying that as a criticism like, of the pick or anything,
or like hey, we could just we
what we do.
We should have, you know, played something better for this. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not chiding anybody or saying anything about that. Yeah. It's just a thing that I think that it's, you know, the idea that there are so many aspects of this that you can't talk about in a critical analysis.
Yeah.
Form. You know, you can't be like, oh, like you go to the villagers and they say a non sequitur, and like I found that, you know, charming as a kid. And I have kind of like a, you know, there's nothing to unpack there. You know, there's no conversation. There's no back and forth. There's no analysis. And I think that's part of what I react to in this. So it ends up being like a weird game that I don't have as much to say about as I thought. You know, like all these general things about how it goes, I have to mm-hmm. say. But a lot of the actual substance of it is kind of wrapped up in that.
Yeah.
You know, I can recount like, oh, this is when the dancer does this and there's a laugh track during this cutscene mm-hmm. that does this, you know, but I can't do much more than recount it.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have that, like I have things to say about the way this relates to the, like to the SNES version and like broadly how things were taken into the N64 and 3D, you know, shift more, you know, more generally, like how this compares to other stuff that made that leap.
There's mechanical things in that for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So like, it's not like there's nothing to say about this. And it just, if you don't feel it, I've got stuff. I've got.
I mean,
stuff
like the plot stuff. Yeah, you know, yeah. is what kind of stymies me about this. You know, it's just it feels unpredictable and surreal. Mm-hmm. But I cannot always tell to what purpose. I guess you play as Goemon in mm-hmm. this and his crew. You're trying to stop criminals from turning medieval Japan into a westernized stage specifically for a evil theater troupe.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. Doing like a Commedia dell'arte, you know, musical kind of stuff.
Yes.
Is what they want to do. Just being real theater weirdos about it.
Yep.
This takes place in a 3D world. And you do action RPG stuff. You've got very basic platforming and combat that notably lead you all over Japan.
Yes.
You go everywhere but Hokkaido, hit every region but Hokkaido.
There's a little bit of a monkey's paw with that in that since it's a Nintendo 64 game, a lot of these are big featureless planes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you do go around to them, but there's not tons of sense of place mm-hmm. in the actual outdoor areas, I find.
Yes. Yeah. That is a problem specifically with the outdoor areas.
Yeah. The dungeons have a personality, but again, there's also not like a ghost toy castle mm-hmm. in real Japan. So that's not part of the tour, I guess. this is not a big franchise over here. You know, this jump to 3D was not as transformative as Mario 64, you know, that came out. And this is a 3D version of SNES game. It doesn't do the kind of accommodations that something like Ocarina of Time or Mario 64 did to make it a brand new thing.
And this is the thing where, you know, where I feel like I've got stuff to talk about with this, which is this is very clearly like, okay, let's take the structure and, you know, the form of the SNES games and then just like make them 3D. You do a lot of the same kind of stuff.
Yes.
And the dungeons are just not side-scrolling platformer, kind of deals. And that is interesting to me that they do very little to hide that. There are presentational elements that they couldn't do on, you know, the SNES versions or what have you. But playing this, it feels like it's a little damning. It doesn't feel like the play does anything that could not have happened or been done better on the SNES version.
Better in the SNES version or in 2D. In like a stage-based game, and the one after this went to stage-based,
stage-based
2D for 2D that
kind of stuff. Yeah.
I think that too. Like, I have stuff to say about that too. I also think of it as kind of damning. Like, it's kind of a bummer. Mm-hmm. It's part of why this, you know, it lands in the 7 of 10 zone.
Yes,
you know,
like Super Mario 64, most graceful jump to 3D there was. Actually became a different enough game that people don't even talk about 2D and 3D Mario games as being part of the same series, really.
Yeah,
and go back and play Ocarina of Time and just look at it as this is a 3D retelling of Link to the Past. And that takes away some of the veneer of the presentational stuff that kind of obscures it. Right.
Yeah.
It really makes it feel here. This is not pretending to be like an upgrade or even an improvement on the SNES one.
It just makes it harder to aim.
Yeah.
I wanted that lock on pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
There another kind of thing in this that's a little bit strange to me is that there are multiple characters. You have four characters. You can swap between whenever you like. They have very similar abilities. Mm-hmm. They run, jump, and have a melee attack that's the same. They do have different weapons and items. It takes a while for them to start feeling different.
Yes.
And start feeling use cases for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it takes a while. Like, you unlock things. Each of them gets a magical ability that is situationally useful, and you get like not sub weapons, just like other weapons to switch to that act like keys for different locks.
Yes.
Yeah.
We got Goemon, our little man. He attacks things with a pipe, and he can throw money.
Yeah,
at people.
Throws those little Rio medallions. So starts out having a ranged attack that uses your money, mm-hmm. but it is very difficult to aim. So I did not rely on it very much.
It's very difficult to aim.
Yeah.
We got Ibisumaru.
Ibisumaru.
Yeah. Ibisumaru. Who has a hammer. And later gets magical abilities that are kind of Metroidvania-y, like you have to do this to get past this lock.
Mm-hmm.
End up being my least favorite character just because his stuff was so functional.
Yeah.
And not expressive.
Mm-hmm. There's Yae, the ninja secret agent lady. She has a katana, and her magical ability has her turn into a mermaid. Mm-hmm. When we say these characters are really similar to each other, part of that is like other games differentiate these. So like Goemon and Yae generally have similar abilities. But Yae's weapons, she gets like better, like combo stuff. Right.
Yeah.
Cause she's got a ninja, she's got a sword. Here, she's really similar. She gets a bazooka, but still functionally, that's not terribly different than throwing the Rio coins.
Yeah. And the mermaid thing is just a key.
Yes.
Like it's, you have to go underwater in some areas. This allows you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the last character you get is Sasuke, the mechanical ninja. He uses kunai like little daggers, attacks pretty quick, and gets a high jump and can throw bombs.
Yep. Yeah. Little robot boy.
Yeah.
You improve your overall health by finding luck dolls out in the world, either 4 silver or 1 gold. So we straight up have Ocarina, your heart container pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in town, you can buy equipment. This ended up being a disappointment to me.
Yes.
The way these work, this is not equipment items for like expression. They're just, if you played Isaac, they're soul hearts.
Mm-hmm.
They're just things that will soak hits, both melee and ranged.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't affect your health. And you can also buy rice balls, which will heal you on death, get you mm-hmm. back. This is all just buying extra life points.
Yes.
In different forms. What this creates in terms of a gameplay loop is, for me, overhead of a chore to go fill these up if I want to be at max health. Like, there's, I wasn't really participating in an economy. Mm-hmm. I just had to make a shot run by the shop to buy all the things if I wanted to have maximum health.
There's also the problem that this is a very easy game.
Yeah, you don't need these at all.
You really don't. And, you know, something that is a problem for this, there are occasionally points where you end up needing to spend a lot of money just to get the next plot coupon.
Yes.
There are quick ways to make the money, but also, like, why would I spend it in the first place?
Yeah, there's not, the economy in this game is not good.
Yes.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Something I think is good is that a large portion of this game takes place in these towns, where you do small quests and talk to quirky inhabitants. Like, having broad non-combat zones where you could just be was, you know, again, when I was a kid, pretty cool. Although it does lack something that the SNES one has, which is tons of little mini games that you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I ended up finding these feeling very empty to me. Like, they're okay. You know, it's better than nothing, but I just wanted the game to be stages pretty bad, with maybe you go to the town in between, like a Shovel Knight or something, as opposed to making my way across a big empty Hyrule field.
Yes.
You know, and that's a bugbear I have with this. The outdoor areas are really huge and have, like, very sparsely populated dudes or even incident.
Yeah.
It's a big field with a hill and there'll be like three guys on it, and you have to traverse it every time you want to go back and forth between these two zones.
Yeah, you don't have to engage with those guys. You can just run around them if you want.
Yeah.
Dungeons are where the incident is. Like, these are cool. I like them. They're a little bit more Zelda-like, but, like, room-based, as opposed to, like, you know, N64 Zelda, which tries to be a little bit more, like,
holistic. This is not. This is a series of, like, kind of challenge rooms.
Yes.
Occasionally, there'll be a branching path where you have to go off in one way to get a key to go into the other door. I generally like these, too. I would have liked the game more if it was only these, basically as a series of stages.
But they've got good platforming gimmicks, and this is also where a lot of style is. Like, each of these dungeons has its own, you know, kind of visual look to it, which is neat. They also, in addition to having keys and stuff, you know, they follow Zelda things. You get a map, which is just a little elephant man, Mr. Elephant, which is like a doll of the narrator. Your narrator is an elephant. I do not understand.
Yep.
And you get, like, a compass that shows you where the boss is, a little scarecrow called Mr. Arrow.
Yeah. There are a few of these scenes where you fight giant robots. A mecha called Impact shows up to help you out with a fight. I actually hate these. I'm on different wavelength than you. They take forever. Every enemy has way too much health in these kind of things, and they feel the same to me.
Okay.
I wanted more variation, and I wanted them to be have a lot more variety to what you do. In them.
Yeah. Like, I do wish that there was a little bit more that you could do. Like, it's definitely, so these take place, like, you're in the cockpit and it's it's first person, and you've got, like, quick attack, like quick melee, slow melee. You can do combos with those. You can also block incoming things. And you have
a projectile based on how well you did during a mini game that takes place before these.
And then your, like, ultimate attack is this big mouth laser. And you can also, like, grapple the enemy to break them out of it. I thought that each of these giant robots that you fought had a good variety of things that they did. So, like, each of them felt different enough to me to be entertaining, and I didn't feel them being too long.
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing wrong. It's a thing that I have an issue with the bosses across the board in this, is they take too long. Like, they're simple, and then I just would get it. And then have to repeat it a lot of times.
Yeah.
They just have, you know, big HP pools.
Something that is true about the Impact sections is there is nothing that tutorializes.
Oh, yeah. I had to look it up online. Yeah, I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing.
Go pull up the manual. It's like, okay, like, I can punch when he's near, but, like, okay, what do I do when he's away? Not realizing that I had projectiles, but also, like, not realizing that I had that mouth laser that charges up. Like, that's the main attack. Like, you know, need to figure out when and how to fire that to damage who's going to come in. Otherwise, you're just not going to survive.
Chip damage. Yeah. The it's a hard thing to land. Like, they don't stay still very long, and it has a wind up and such. I just ended up, I like, again, the spirit of, like, having these to break things up. You know, cool. I didn't understand the humor of it, and I wanted the execution to be a little bit better, I think. It's cool that they're there. You know, and I could see if I played this when it had come out, I would have thought these were badass, because you play in a giant robot. mm-hmm. know, and like you do you break up and do a big kaijo battle. Mm-hmm. I think these kind of like impactful, like consequential mini macro games that can pop up, there's just levels of execution of them.
Yeah.
The closest thing it reminds me of is the pacing of the tank battles in Rocket Slime.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, that game came out way later, but like I think those are more fun.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think this is an aesthetically pretty impressive game. Nice and colorful, expressive characters. Mm-hmm. You know, the dungeons, I think, look really good. They've got good theming to them. And the music just bops. I fucking love the music in this game so much.
The soundtrack's real good.
Yeah.
Of this.
And like weirdly, even the vocal music is real good.
It's like, there's a couple like parody song, you know, mm-hmm. of like an Ultraman theme mm-hmm. song things. In general, I am more here for the instrumental music. Yeah. But I think it's pretty good.
Yes. Yeah. But these are like mixtures of, you know, pop composition, like video game music and traditional Japanese style music. Just front to back earworms. It's so good.
Yeah, it's a good soundtrack for sure.
Mm-hmm. And the dungeon music is on this variable mix, which is a subtle effect, but a good one. Starts out pretty basic, but as you progress and get closer to the boss, you know, more tracks are kind of faded up.
Yeah, what a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is very cartoony. This feels aimed at the youngs. And the as we mentioned, a lot of stuff is kind of localized, but has no context. Mm-hmm. There's a laugh track telling you where jokes are in it. Yeah. You know, but there's wordplay that is not being translated.
Yes.
There.
Yeah. And that's going to be a real, you know, your mileage is going to vary on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, again, just for me, it's hard to talk about, you know, jokes I don't get. Mm-hmm. The, Goemon is a huge series in Japan, based on a folk hero, mm-hmm. You know, and basically morphed into this tiny little, like, flute smashing Goku.
Little blue-haired man. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, used to be a much more serious character.
Yes.
And then became this kind of goofy guy. Right. But it's a huge, you know, tentpole franchise for Konami mm-hmm. that just never really transferred over.
No. And I can understand, like, it, I mean, even just, like, translating or localizing this, like, what do you do?
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't think they did a good job when they did it. Like, you know, like it's not localized very well.
Yeah, they didn't do a good job, and also it was a hard job to do.
Yeah, it was difficult, and the result was not great. It was hard and boring. You know, I get why they didn't do it, and it probably, like, imagine doing the NES games, which probably, you know, had less of this quirky sense of humor. Like, it was a continuum that Goemon turned mm-hmm. into this little goof off. Yeah. But it would still be difficult on NES restrictions.
Yes.
To get that in.
Yeah. The series started with 1986's Mr. Goemon, mm-hmm. an arcade platformer kind of deal, but then moved over to Famicom and SNES. They had some turn-based RPGs, and they had some action RPGs, the action ones being Ganbare Goemon, mm-hmm. You know, which is this is part of the style for. We got the second of the SNES ones over here as Legend of the Mystical Ninja in 1991. The thing that I had read was basically like Konami didn't really have an awful lot at that time to bring over. It was like Castlevania 4 and then this.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what got Mystical Ninja kind of kicked into the US release stream there.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was the one that I played when I was younger that I'd forgotten about.
Yeah. I talked about this in the Hidden Gems live mm-hmm. episode that we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we didn't get anything else in Mystical Ninja Land until this one, 1998. Imagine my surprise when this weird game that my cousins had
7 years
loved
later
playing suddenly was popping up. And who is this Goemon? This is Kid Yang. You maniacs.
Yeah. So they knew that since it's a huge franchise, they knew they were going to do a Nintendo 64 entry. And they intended for this to be two player. Like the previous games, they ended up dropping this feature. It's difficult to do. Mm-hmm. You know, the aim was to take advantage of this 3D engine and provide a lot of visual variety to the scenes.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they did half, you know, mm-hmm. in the dungeons.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, to aid this, they shipped it on a gigantic cartridge, 128 megabits, huge, primarily because of the size of the world, number of textures and stuff, but also like vocal samples, both like, you know, voice and in the music as well. So mm-hmm. just lots of bits crammed into this.
Yes. Yeah. When they translated this, they had to get rid of the slur for effeminate enemies that they had. Good they got rid of that.
Yeah, pretty happy. Yeah. Like
it would have been real jarring to have all of these jokes. Like, there's something fishy about that joke. Laugh track, and I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then just throw a slur out and just be like, well, like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Like, what are you going for here?
I'm not going to use the word because I know it's offensive. There is a very good Legends of Localization post about, just do a search on the Legends of Localization page, talking about that particular phrase, referring specifically to like effeminate men. Is the deal there, referring to that, and like the number of ways that it was treated in translation across a number of different games. Like Dragon Quest is full of this.
Yes. Yep. The goofy.
Yeah.
The game received okay reviews in the United States. It's a 7 out of 10, maybe. You know, and feels deserved to me. Even, you know, I guess that's saying something. Like, if this has the same, to me, playing this today, it was basically that.
Yes.
You know, yeah. which is good. Like, that, that's a level of hold up that is rare to apply the Nintendo 64.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, I will never play this again.
No.
Like, not for a million years. you know, not for anything. But I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. I don't regret it. It was fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, batting above weight class for the N64.
Right? Doing way better than most Nintendo 64 games do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was one more Goemon game that was localized into English. The Goemon's Great Adventure, the sequel to this for the N64. This is a 2.5D platformer. I have not played it, but it looks fun. So I might fuck around.
I'm glad it goes back to it being 2D, basically, and a platformer.
Yeah. Yeah. At the time, I was disappointed in that move, thinking like, oh, gosh, why would they step backward? You know, now, 20 years later, you know, whatever, 25 years later, I understand that that is that's a good thing. That's
what
a good
the work calls did. For, you yes. know, like that was a very common attitude among like fans, you know, myself included, and like games reviewers and stuff. And it was stupid then, you know, we didn't know.
Yeah. The series continued in Japan with varying levels of success. They tried getting like a new cast in. Why would you get rid of these characters? They would go on until a DS entry in 2005, and then nothing else.
Yeah. Poised for a comeback. So let's get into it. We start with a store manager chasing Goemon, and I'm going to say this wrong. I'm just letting you know that, Cole. It is okay to correct me, but I'm not going to get this right every single time.
Yeah, I'll say it for you here. Ebisu Maru.
Ebisu Maru.
Break it into two words.
It's real hard not to sight read it, and there's a lot of ways to sight read it.
Yes.
But Goemon and Ebisu Maru out of a store because Ebisu Maru stripped down to his underwear. And Goemon yells at him and he says, I thought he would be impressed with my physique and give us a discount.
Yes.
Yes.
Kind of setting some tone here.
Yeah. He's a sex offender. setting a tone. This is a Grand Theft Auto style game where you play as a series of sex offenders.
I mean, Ebisu Maru is the only one. It's a he's the quagmire of the group, you know.
He's a real quagmire with all that entails.
The ground rumbles and this huge peach-shaped spaceship flies over the town and attacks Oedo Castle.
Yes. We cut to a cutscene inside the ship. There are two people, two men and a cackling woman who are talking about firing this beam at the castle. These are our villains. Mm-hmm. And the Lord and Princess Yuki are inside the castle.
Right.
And what they've done is change the castle into a Western style like castle, a European castle. Mm-hmm. But the people inside are still alive. So we have to go save them while Ebisu Maru goes home to put on clothing. And probably rub one out. if we're being honest. Yeah. Like, there's no way that he's not getting off exposing himself to shopkeepers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And the furtive masturbator so easily yes. forgotten.
Okay, I didn't forget. Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Pepperidge Farm wishes it could forget. Yeah. So we're at the beginning of the game, and we're wandering around in Noedo Town, talking to people, and they call this UFO the Flying Peach.
Yep.
And the police talk about it impossible to get into Noedo Castle, right? We need to figure out how to get across. The only way is this star block that we need to figure out how to use.
We show there, when we show up there, it says we can activate this with a chain device from Mukibe.
Mukibe?
Mukibe, the pipe maker on Mount Fuji. This also introduces the mechanic and towns of the pickpockets, little guys who run at you and make you explode like Sonic. Or when you hit them, they explode like Sonic. They just run at you and take your money. Right. Again, the economy in this game is nothing. I thought this really mattered at first, and I got mad, and I'm like, oh, you take it.
This only happens in Noedo Town, and it feels just like a little throwback, because these guys were all over the place, at least in Legend of the Mystical Ninja.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you are lost, if you need to figure out what to do, you can always go to the fortune teller, this demon guy who rides a big scarecrow looking thing whose vocal take is to say the word plasma.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Random. I don't know how to. Yeah, I don't know how to talk about it. He yells plasma.
Yeah.
And it's worth it. Like, a lot of the reviews and contemporaneous reviews of this stuff on GameFAQs, like, just, you know, meme it is how they are interfacing with this humor, like just saying plasma themselves.
Yes.
So to go get this this thing for the star block, we had to go on the Kai Highway. The main area here are these little robots dressed like tiny girls.
The main enemy. Yeah.
The main enemy. Yeah. These little robots, there are pink ones and green ones. Some of them are holding little gifts that shoot out a little metal ball at us. And then also these flying demon heads that start above head level and then come in at an angle.
Yeah.
For you to jump and hit.
Fine individually to attack, but you do not need to because you can just run around them. It's real, like, why are there traffic jams in the Jetsons world?
Yes. Just
fly up.
Yeah. Eventually they will, most of the rooms and dungeons are kill all the enemies.
Yes.
You know, like, a lot of some of them aren't, but a lot of them are. And then you have a reason to engage in the combat.
Yeah. I'm speaking specifically when you're in these gigantic outdoor,
you just run,
you know, zones.
So
there's a coffee house. Like, coffee houses are like fast travel points we're gonna find once we get fast travel. You can also pop in there and get clues. There's this traveling merchant who gives us our world map, so we can check in, you know, where we're at in relation.
So we get to Mount Fuji, and we have to climb up the series of ladders and platforms up the mountain, dealing with these scarecrows that shoot spread shots, falling boulders, and more like platforming.
Yeah,
that we have to do.
When you're inside the crater, there are these like slinky enemies that will go up and down the stairs. You got to like position yourself under the arc as they go. But this is not too difficult. And also, you don't have to go back down this when you're done. You just have to jump down the side of the mountain and slide.
I really like that. Like, I was like, oh, is there going to be fall damage? Like, no. You just throw yourself off the mountain. It's great.
But you get to the top and you find Mukibe, the pipe maker, who gives you your first kind of upgraded weapon, your first alternate weapon, the chain pipe. This gives a little bit of range to Goemon's attack, and it also acts as like a limited grappling hook, letting you get these star blocks.
Difficult to aim, I think. Like, you know, I really wanted a lock on or something. There's a reason why that happened on these. So we return to town. We use this chain to cross the river to get to the castle's back door. We are now in a castle. This is the dungeon. Ecology. We have some basic kind of jumping and grappling, getting around this flooded room by jumping between turtles. It's worth noting the way the water works in this. You're fine if you land in water. You cannot jump out of water, and you can't beat yourself up on a ledge. You have to find a ramp. This is games do this all the time in this era, and games do it now. I'm not singling out this game. I did get frustrated that some of the platforming challenges were like you just fall down in the water and have a very long, slow swim to try it back again. That's irritating to me. I don't know. You just take half my health and put me back on the platform,
please.
Or take, you know, half a heart or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You get to a room that is actionably Zelda, where you're locked in and they're flying tatami mats instead of tiles that'll come and get you. You got to whack them out of the air enough to make the key appear. Right.
Yes. Yeah. If you avoid them all, it won't appear, which I was afraid I soft locked myself, but I came back and started killing them. There are these kind of big rice ball skewer enemies that move back and forth. We have to get by. Mm-hmm. We eventually we reach the third floor and we meet Baron, who is an effeminate man with an asymmetrical blue haircut. Yeah. And he's here to make Uedo Castle a beautiful stage.
Right. And he runs away. Like, he is one of many, like, people who is looks basically the same, except for the color palette, you know?
They all look like Nintendo 64 Human League. Like, if you can imagine the Human League in a Nintendo 64 visual palette, that's what they look like.
Yeah. And I was about to make a joke about if they stuck around, that probably would have absolutely been one of their music videos was them as little polygon people. But I don't know when the Human League broke up.
And also, as far as I know, they are the Human League, and it's just a translation that didn't come across.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it seems it would be, you know, it just license their appearances, put that on the box. You got the Human League, baby.
Yeah, Goemon featuring the Human League.
I do want you, baby.
Feeling fascinated? We got Goemon featuring the Human League.
Man. Rapidly Googling to see if Don't You Want Me, Baby was the Human League.
Yeah, yeah, that's the Human League.
Woo!
Yeah, I got you. I got you, fam.
Thanks.
Oh man.
So he runs away and we have our first boss fight against this gigantic robot head, Kongo, the king robot, who's kind of built into the castle.
Yes.
Very simple. This,
yeah, super simple. This kind of starts my issues with the boss fights in this. Getting the patterns really easy. Mm-hmm. He's really slow. He breathes fire and you have to run around him to avoid it. He does a laser spinning attack. You have to jump over and you just hit him and it takes a long time. Like there's not very much that you're being asked to do. Mm-hmm. Like it's not hard to avoid damage this long. It's almost like an endurance test of something very easy.
Yeah.
You know, like how long can you sit? It feels like that. Like it's fine. It wouldn't be a big thing. You know, it's the first boss. I just find a lot of the bosses feel this way to me.
Yeah, I didn't have that particular problem, but I can't account for why there's that difference. You
know? Yeah. Yeah, it's just I don't know if because when you get the little cat, the heart pieces, I thought you were increasing your strength. It's actually your life. So I thought maybe at first I wasn't doing enough damage, you know, to them. I think I just, you know, there's no universe in which I'm going to gamer brag about this. I just figured out how to avoid damage fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And then I just had to hit. You know, there just wasn't a whole lot to it.
Yeah.
To me.
I would agree. It's too simple. So he leaves behind our little MacGuffin items. These miracles is what they're called. They're just little polygon shapes. It's the miracle moon is what we have. We meet the Lord, you know, the Lord of Uedo. And he says, like, hey, Baron ran off in a hurry. He heard them calling this power the instant stage beam. You know, they're going to go around and turn all these parts of Japan into a big performance space.
Yep. He says, hey, will you help him? If you say yes, he gives you the gate pass. You can leave the city.
Yes.
otherwise you're stuck in here with me.
Yeah. Oh gosh. So this lets us go to the, Shinano Iga region. You know, we pass through this little beach on the way. We're going to be coming back here and get to this area where the sun is setting and it's real pretty. Nice little color palette change that you get. As you run through this valley, though, a big pagoda with a frog head on it explodes and collapses.
Yes. And we find, we search the rubble, we find the Triton shell. This used to belong to a wise man, capital W, capital M, who used it to summon the robot Impact. We've heard about Impact. Impact is a giant robot who is making movies even in America.
Yes.
Townspeople have talked about Impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big famous guy who looks a lot like Goemon.
Yes.
Yeah. And Baron shows up. He says, hey, I destroyed the wise man's hut. And now I'm going to attack you with my giant robot. And then we get the first of our little Ultraman transformation mecha theme song kind of things. Goemon blows the Trident shell, and we get this musical sequence about impact. You know, dash, dash, dash.
In development, there were a lot more of these. They ended up cutting them to make other things work.
Yes.
It was a thing where certain things in the game were just weren't working. Mm-hmm. A weird thing about this, this won't impact your play. This is highly breakable jank. Speedrunners of this game, it's real fun to watch because mm-hmm. you can jump up every hill you're not supposed to jump on and just kind of scoot everywhere. they fixed some of the stuff. They didn't fix all of it. I'm not saying like lazy devs, bad devs or anything like
no,
that.
No, no, no.
It's just it's highly exploitable.
Yeah.
These begin with a you're skating down a valley at kind of a 45 degree angle. Mm-hmm. I did not know what I was supposed to be doing. You can jump over bridges and gaps, but you have a really long wind up to your jump. Mm-hmm. So when you jump, there's like a Castlevania whip delay before you jump. Mm-hmm. And you want to, I didn't know whether I was meant to be avoiding or smashing into things.
Yeah. You need to commit war crimes. No collateral damage is good.
Yeah. I also don't know where this is him coming from, wherever he's at. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing just killing an unrelated army on his way to help us out.
It is pretty funny. It is my legs are very long.
Yeah, you know? Just destroying a city.
Yeah.
It's happening over there. Yeah. Impact kills all of those people and then comes to help us with our bullshit. But yeah, you want to smash as much stuff as possible. I don't know if falling in pits has a negative impact on your health.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It's small, but yeah.
Yeah, you get your first impact fight here mm-hmm. against wartime Kabuki robot Kashigawi.
Yes. Yeah. Again, for first person inside of a mech, you press the Z button, like the trigger, to shoot your Ryo out mm-hmm. of Impact's nose to do a little bit of damage at the distance. You gain Ryo by punching down the missiles as they come in. And you're like either waiting for him to come in, to do his own melee attacks, or you are grappling him in order to get your combos in.
Yes. And the projectile attacks do absolute chip damage, like do very, very bullshit damage. I generally use those to shoot projectiles out of the air. Mm-hmm. He starts throwing umbrellas at you. So I knock those out of the air with those. And then he will do his final phase. He summons little ghost versions of himself. Yeah. And you have to, face the right direction to punch them.
Yes.
Before they get you.
Yeah. So when this is done, Impact says like, hey, I gotta go. Gotta skate to America where I'm filming a movie. That's another thing about Goemon as a series. Lots of anachronisms,
Yes.
Like they're just kind of playing real fast and loose.
It's ancient Japan, but there are also American movies with giant robots.
Right.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to Zazentown.
Mm-hmm.
Here. We get inside and you say yai or yay? What did you
yai two syllables.
Yai greets us. She's been following this peach UFO as well.
And the elephant narrator gives us some context. She's the secret ninja agent, who has been tracking down this mysterious flake gang that is led by the Peach Mountain Shoguns, giving us the name of the organization that we're going after. And she joins us and is not appreciably different than Goemon for a while.
Yes. Has a katana, but you can play her if you prefer. Yeah. The citizens talk about this rash of kidnappings that have been happening in the town. And the bridge leading out of town is blocked by this bandit named Benkai. He demands your treasure to pass, but we don't have any treasure. We've been throwing mm-hmm. it at dudes.
Yeah.
So we go and talk to the most handsome knight, Ushigawa,
right.
Nearby, who says, we'll get you across the bridge if you do us a favor. I would like some fish from Duck Creek.
Yeah.
So we have to go down and collect. This is real tasky. Go down and collect a certain number of fish by walking into them.
Yeah. It's a certain number of like particular colored fish. So I want all the blue fish, I want all the yellow fish, etc. To get him in. As you are changing the world state, the dialogue in town will change to give mm-hmm. you like relevant information. That is neat if you are looking to read more text, but mm-hmm. also it contributes to the game being pretty easy to figure out. Like you can just go talk to anybody and they'll give you a clue about what's happening right now. Which I don't see as a bad thing, but
no, that's fine. It's good. When you do it, he gives you a log. The log is named Achilles' Heel. Mm-hmm. And the idea here is you throw it, you do a mini game, you throw it at the bandit, at his feet when he lands. He's going to jump just up and down and not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you, when he lands, you press the button to throw a log at him. I get the idea of the joke that you're using Achilles' heel as an item and throwing it at somebody.
Yes.
I get that, I guess. You know, that, that's all right. It doesn't look like a heel. I don't understand how
It's just a log. It's a non sequitur. I've got it in the notes here. The thing that I find funny is the narrator saying, and that's why somebody's weakness is called the Achilles heel to this day. That is like that is funny, like misattributing the origin. But then Abyss Amaro says, wait, that doesn't sound right, which takes the air out of it because everything Abyss Amaro
says there's something fishy about that story and says quotation marks. Mm-hmm. And I assume that's because we had to go find fish.
Maybe.
For this, and I was again just fucking lost. Like I'm not being willfully obtuse about this, and I anticipate people being like, Gary, you're overthinking it. It's just silly, but like I don't know. I don't interface with jokes that way. No. I like, you know, explaining a joke doesn't make it funny, but generally, almost all jokes I like, I can explain why they're funny, and you and I engage in that all the time. Like we do these, I think you should leave, you know, rankings and stuff like that. Like explaining why something is funny is no crime. You know, and I can't explain why this is funny.
Yeah.
Even though I'm getting a literal laugh track, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought misattributing the origin was funny. The stuff around it was not.
Yeah. I mean, misattributing the origin is okay.
Yes.
You know, I'll give that a point.
Yes.
Point to go him on.
Yeah. Yeah. Benkei, who, as I was making the notes, I always wrote as Benkei. Listen to this quality vacuum.
Todd Benkei. Yeah. IFB.
Oh man. But to keep us quiet about his weakness, Benkei says, like, hey, here's some treasure that somebody gave me. It is the lifeless body of our friend, the mechanical ninja Sasuke.
Yes.
So we need to find new batteries for him.
Yep, our fourth member of our coterie.
Yeah.
It's not his weakness getting hit by logs. The log was the weakness. Okay, so Yoji Yamato, this is this field with a bamboo forest around it. One part of the bamboo forest has the turtle rock, which we can push in the four cardinal directions. It's very Zelda, are you a bad enough dude to, you know, push a block?
Yeah, four puzzle. Different
but
directions.
You do, yeah, four yeah. different directions. You do that and you get treasures or strength cats.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like one gets, you know, gets you into this shrine that's nearby, do a little platforming to get a strength cat, etc.
Yeah.
Another takes you to this next region here, Ki and the Awaji Island, out on the coast here.
Yes. There's an Oedo tourist center here who has a dragon that will let you fast travel, but their dragon has gone wild. So you have to tame it. You know, dragon's gone wild, just went wilder. You warp to the dragon and find that's been taken over by a robot. So you do this little platforming on the back of a dragon. Like, this is cool. You're going, you know, nice little bit of pacing and variety. This, you know?
Yeah. And then you have a, you've got a fight against the robot that's controlling it. It's the control robot. It is, you know, the another one of these Baron guys, the human, one of the human league named Colin, who was here.
Yeah.
You know, and says, like, yeah, we are, you know, using this dragon to kidnap kids with dancing talent to, like, recruit into the order.
To put on our show. Yeah. So we stay at the back of the dragon. You know, we go up the dragon. And then you get to, while attacking the colon, the control robot, between times where it spins and does the projectiles.
Yeah.
And I have one move, it has one move, and we take turns doing it.
Yeah.
You know? After you do this, the dragon drops you off at the foot of Kampira Mountain and turns into a young child named Koryuta.
Koryuta says, like, hey, I was hypnotized and they were forcing me to take kids to the Dogo Hot Springs up at Io. And then says, like, hey, now I want to help you because I feel guilty for this. Here's this flute that lets you summon me. And there's, you know, a little gag here, kind of relating to, so Abyss Amaro's weapon in the SNES version is a flute. So Abyss Amaro's like, hey, I can play it. And Goemon gives it to Yae because he doesn't want his annoying friend to have a flute that he can play.
Ah, yeah. Yes. It's in the, he has a hammer in our version. I thought this was a dreadful skin flute joke.
No,
because I didn't know why what the joke was. Like, I was like, I mean, that felt off key, yeah. but I don't know. I was just searching.
You're just trying to snap it onto grid for jokes.
Yeah, just and again, I wouldn't like that joke better, you know, the one that I came up with in my head. So we climb up this mountain to reach Kampira Shrine, where we have Goemon throw 5 coins into the offering chest to receive the Metal of Flames weapon upgrade. This allows us to light torches, Zelda fans.
Oh gosh, more kids have been taken from this town, from Follypoke Village is where we kind of have landed. And like specifically they have been targeted because they won dance championships.
Yes. So you proceed in the wilds beyond the town. We had to cross this vine bridge. Parts were very fragile, so we had to walk slowly to get across. Yeah. It
tech demo 1980. Yeah. It's late for a tech demo, but just like analog controls.
Yes. We can't get into the Dogen hot springs because the main door is locked, but there's a small passageway off to the side.
And by small, it's like mouse size.
Yes. Yeah. Like a small Mario. We're going to eventually get Ibisu Maru's, superpower.
Yeah. You can tricky dink. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we just put Ibisu Maru in the oven.
Yeah. Just head first. Pervert.
So the fortune teller can tell us like, hey, the priest at somebody in Zazentown will have information for you. And that handsome knight, Ushigawa, he is now standing on top of a post, like a fence post where he was. And he's now a little guy. He's tiny.
Yeah, he became Tiny Dancing Man.
Yes.
There are a couple of things in this in terms of signaling. I wish you didn't have to rely on the fortune teller.
Yeah.
As much to know what to do next. That can feel a little arbitrary. Like it would be worse without the fortune teller there, but it feels patchy, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
He says, if you eat too many sweets from the golden temple in Zazen, you'll shrink down. And then we go to a mini game where we got a Bisimaru in the cupboard. He's shrunken down in a cupboard looking for sweets, but hiding behind items when a baby opens the door. Like, I like this. I think this is cute. Here it's just it's real strange.
A little silly mini game.
And that's how it's like, you're already in the cabinet, aren't you already shrunken down, man?
But he can't sustain it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It hurts.
My organs, no.
Yeah, everything shrinks about him except for his liver. Yeah. And he just drags around this big flesh sack like Sisyphus.
Ow, yeah. I landed on my liver.
Heck at this, ow. You motherfucker. Yeah.
It was Prometheus, you dolt.
I know, but I thought it was pretty fun that I called liver randomly and then brought up another myth with livers.
Okay. I'm sorry I called you a dolt. It was for comedy value.
It's okay.
Oh man. So this lets us get into the hot springs. We can get through the door. Gets us into this transformed ghost toys castle is what it's called.
Yes. I really wish this was just a toy castle.
Yes.
The ghost part of this is less interesting. Like finding a bunch of toys is cool. So the power is out in the castle at first. You have to get to the basement and turn it on. And we do another mini game. We play this crane game to win the wind up camera. This is Ibisumaru's special weapon. This reveals invisible items and makes ghost material so he can attack them. Yes. It's a temporary curse.
Just use this at a place where it seems like an item should be, and then it'll be there. Key for a lock. We take it upstairs and we can use it at the beginning of a room to reveal this floor over some poisoned water. To find the safe way across and get some keys, get the golden key rather.
Yeah. Something I do think is really fun. The final key is behind this challenge room on a big pool table where you're on a big pool table. The balls are coming out to hit them in order.
Yes.
I think that's good. That's fun. That's imaginative. Good. It's something like, the Joker might do to Batman, I like it.
Does Batman have to be a baby when this happens?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
I think he did put him on a big pool table. But at some point, I have a Batman the Animated Series image in my head of Batman on a giant pool table.
I challenge you to find a better place to change somebody's diaper.
It's actually very
in a bar.
Soft. Yeah. Scratch. The boss is the Surrender Robot.
Darumanyo.
Yeah, Darumanyo. This is a Russian doll that turns into a mech to attack. And we use the camera to reveal the weak spot to make him like translucent mm-hmm. in parts, and shows his heart, which we can run up and hit.
Yeah. He's mobile. Like, that is a point in this boss's favor compared to the other
robot. He does move. Yeah. He's kind of like a big Wolverine robot kind of thing. He's got big claws.
Yeah.
You know, kind of big mitts he slams down. Mm-hmm. After you fight this guy for quite a while, your reward is the Miracle Flower. And Colin is about to give you a little speech when the Mystery Man, the leader of the Peach Mountain Shoguns, appears. Spring Breeze Dancing. Mm-hmm. He does not learn your name, so he gives you a name. He calls you Antonio.
Yes. He could think he calls Abyssamaru Antonio and calls Goemon Fernandez.
Yes.
Something like that. It's literally just, no, I shall name you.
Yeah. Yes. We are now Abyssongs. Yes. And they challenge you to meet them in the Chogoku region.
Yeah. So that's where we head.
People in the coffee house here talk about seeing batteries in the desert mm-hmm. at this lake with a tree in it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got to get batteries for our little ninja clockwork man.
Mm-hmm. You go and get them. Like, the desert's just big and hilly. The lake with the tree is just, you just got to jump up statues or jump up platforms around it and then use the wind up camera to reveal the bullet. Yeah. Or the camera rather. So we get this, and Sasuke reactivates. His memory is corrupted because of the explosion, the damage. The only person who can fix him is the wise man, but he is disappointed to hear that the wise man's house exploded and he has gone missing.
Yes. So Sasuke joined you, and we can now use his firecracker ability to blow open doors and walls that he has with this firecracker bomb he throws. Yes. When I'm just moving around, this is the character I like to be. It felt like he moved faster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that's necessarily true, but it felt faster. I couldn't do an A-B comparison.
Yeah, I like playing a Sasuke.
Yeah. We pass through this mountain region after this and get to the Shuhodo cave, where we use these bombs that we just got to make our way to the next dungeon.
Yes, the Festival Temple Castle.
Yes.
This is big. Like, mm-hmm. this is markedly different than any of the dungeons we've done before, because, like, instead of having different floors, there are four wings at the cardinal directions, and each of these is like its own little complex. It's like built like a building with interiors and exteriors.
Yes. Yeah. Some of the rooms here have these seesaw platforms that change the room as you change their balance. Right. So you stand on one side and it kind of readjust things in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end of this long path, you find a new weapon for Sasuke, this kunai of extreme cold. This is a throwable. What it will do is it will stop flames and also cool down heated up platforms and freeze them in place because they're generally moving up and down. So you can jump on them. And you know, you got to move off before they heat back up again. But this lets you pass those. And if you charge up, it does like a spread pattern.
Yes. So you can use this in the central building of the West Wing to freeze a floating platform and reach the Meat Saw Hammer. This is an upgrade for Abyssamaru. This makes enemies drop dumplings on death. The number of redundant ways to get health back or increase your health in this game is so funny.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's a weird thing where, like, economies and items and stuff like that have a harder time working in non-RPG mm-hmm. spaces.
Yeah,
you know, because this kind of platform, like platformer kind of thing, there's nothing like. I was shocked that there isn't a thing that makes you do more damage as a pickup, you know, like that would make a lot of sense to me. Not permanent necessarily, but like, oh, for the rest of this castle, you know, you do extra damage or something. It's all just health, you know?
Yeah.
Health. Again, not a huge deal. It just, mm-hmm. it lends itself to this being very basic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have the Frost Kunai, and you can use that to get to this gold key, climbing up this waterfall of rotating carp until you get to the boss here, the ghost robot Sarima.
Yes. This is the first boss of the SNES game. I had mm-hmm. vague, like, seeing it. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You have very vague memories. This is a ghost that spins energy plates on these dowels and throws them at you. And you need to hit the red plates at the end of the barrages to have them go back to her.
Yes.
And three phases of doing this, doing it slow, doing it fast, and doing kind of random.
I like this because this would be a hard gimmick to do in 3D with no lock on. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's easy and fun in SNES. Like it's a really good boss, fight in that. But mm-hmm. like in this, the ghost robot stays stationary at the center and you're running around and like the camera is following you. You're always in the foreground looking up at her. So you can see when the ones that you, anything that you want is going to like bounce back at you, and you don't really have to aim. You just have to time the hit right, which makes the different phases having the different pace of the throws work.
Yeah. It's a little easy for me.
Mm-hmm. It's got dimension to it.
It's got dimension to it.
It's got good decisions that were made in it. Yeah.
Yeah. It could have been a lot more frustrating for what you're being asked to do.
Yes.
You know, after this, you get the miracle star for winning the fight, and you meet Sharon. This is a green version of Baron, a palette swap of the Human League, similar to how the Human League has that palette, like the several palette swaps in it, actually. She says the ghost robot down, the barrier blocking Kyushu will also go down.
Yeah, that's where their like headquarters is. Yes, in Kyushu, down in the south. And then the other important person in the Peach Shogun gang or what have you, shows up, this laughing mystery woman, always show up going,
she got a Santa laugh.
Yes. She is Kitty Lily and she taunts us before, you know, disappearing, you know, her projection goes away.
Yes. So we head out towards Kyushu. The waitress from Wado, Imitsu, arrives. She's making a food delivery all the way down to the south here.
Yeah.
The
joke being you had to fight so hard to get down here and then she's just walking.
Yeah.
She's just making the delivery.
Yeah. We could have just we could have shrunk ourselves down and ridden inside a takeout order.
Yes. We're unable to stop her. You know, she's crossing this bridge like, hey, you're going right into danger. But as she crosses, the whole island rises into the air and then disappears. You know, this beloved figure from their hometown is gone along with, you know, 1/8 of the landmass of Japan.
Yes. So we have to go. We don't know exactly what to do. Here, the game doesn't tell you. So we go check the fortune teller. Fortune teller says that we should head to the snowy north to find somebody who can help us at Mount Fear.
hey, you know what? It's just a name. It's more of a hillock.
Yeah, it's the new Screamville. But we need to get training in Wado Town first.
Yeah,
to do this. So we go to the gym and we play like a whack-a-mole where there are these inflatable heads that we spin around this platform. We throw projectiles at these inflatable heads.
Yes,
these baby heads to make sure they don't rise up and pop. So like hitting them with the projectile makes some air come out of them.
Yes.
We can't let them inflate too much.
Right. They've got spikes on their head and they're going to pop a balloon. It's one of those things that is hard to describe in words.
Yes. Yeah. It's not how throwing things at balloons works.
No, not
you just kind of, I don't know why they're balloons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this gets you the extra strength, gets Goemon specifically, and you turn Super Saiyan.
Yes.
To enter this sudden impact mode to push these big metal boxes. There's one of these that was in the way of your progress in one direction on the beach outside of Wado. This will also double your damage that you do, but double the damage that you take.
Yes.
As long as you are, you know, using Goemon to fight.
Yeah. And generally worthwhile.
Yeah.
You go to Musashi and push a metal box through a gate to progress to the north.
And you get up, it's, you know, snowy, you run through a snowy area and you get to Mutsu, the festival town where every day but New Year is a festival.
Yeah, kill me
people. Yeah,
so, kill me. I wish I was dead. TGI Mix Scratchies. That's what I was trying to remember the name of it.
Was it TGI Mix Scratchies or was it like New Year Town? I mean, it was on Adult Islands is what it was.
Yeah, but I think it's TGI Mix Scratchies.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Where's New Year's Eve?
Every 10 minutes.
Kill me. I wish I was dead.
Yeah. We can't get up Mount Fear because there's a huge stone that blocks the way. An NPC says, like, hey, my brother, he's this pipesmith up on Mount Fuji.
I recently... legendary Coxman.
He says he's gotten better at making, you know, making his weapons. So we climb back to the top of Mount Fuji and upgrade our weapons to level two. They turn silver and we get like a secondary ability on them.
Yes. Yeah. Yae can use the sword shield. Mm-hmm. Goemon's pipe gets longer. Sasuke uses two kunai with fire effects, and Ibisumaru's hammer gets bigger.
Yes. So yeah. Upgrades. We slash at this rock and climb to the top of Mount Fear and talk to this witch. She charges us 300 Ryo to channel the wise man, you know, who's going to know what to do because, like, hey, this island's gone missing. This is wise man stuff.
Yeah. So we do that. And he says that we need to take the four miracle items to the stone circle in Ugo near the festival town. Then we can get into outer space. That is where Kyushu is.
Yes.
The floating city.
Yeah, or that, you know, that island region of Japan.
Yes.
Kyushu's up there.
Yeah. That flew up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we need to look for the final one of these miracle items. And really the only thing that we can do is go to this waterfall outside of the festival town. And a sign nearby it basically talks about this legend. You know, it's the carp that swims to the top of the waterfall and turns into a dragon. Here, anybody who can swim to the top of this will turn into a mermaid. So legend goes. Yeah. You play a mini game where you have to button mash to make Yae swim to the top of the waterfall while dodging babies that fall at you. You dodge left and right as you are going.
Yes.
It's kind of like an American Gladiators mini game.
It does feel a lot like an American Gladiators video game to me. When you get up there, when you get past this grants her the mermaid magic skill. So she is the one who can go into water and actually go under the surface.
Yes.
Yeah. And we can use this to swim under the frozen sea to get to the next dungeon.
Yeah. This food submarine.
Yes. That's a pun. That makes sense to me. Submarine sandwich, I suppose. Mm-hmm. There's not much unusual other than the theming.
Yeah.
It's like, lots of giant sushis and stuff.
Yeah. And jumping around, like a lot of Japanese food, but there's like hamburgers and stuff. Like the water is broth and it has like vegetables floating in it. It's cute.
It's a big soup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also like it's the water level, but you're not changing the water levels.
Yes.
Sorry, that was a nightmare sentence.
It doesn't integrate the water water into the puzzles, really. You just have to swim past some zones.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Not a big deal. When you get the gold key, when you get to the gold key door, you get Yae's ranged attack, this bazooka. You can charge it up to do a spread shot. I didn't end up using this again because it is difficult to aim.
Yeah. Yeah. The game would benefit from a lock-on.
Yes.
And also, a lot of times, unless the game is making you fight, I don't fight things in this.
Yeah.
So you ride some soup bowls around to get to the bridge where Poron is. Yeah. He says this is our next guy. He dropped his miracle item way back in Zazentown.
Yeah. But we've got to, fight him anyway here.
Yep.
Kitty, Lily, and Spring Breeze dancing up here. We get some shtick of them, being themselves. It's real extra. Yeah.
It's really worth, if people are listening to this as service, I think it's really worth finding these cutscenes just so you can see the experience of having like the characters say things and having laugh tracks and like audience reactions punctuated at places that you do not expect.
Yes.
It's almost Lynchian.
I mean,
like,
it almost
feels like Beef House or something.
I was very specifically going to mention the rabbits shorts that David Lynch did that are incorporated into Inland Empire. Like, it's kind of a similar vibe.
it's a little similar to that, you know. But
menacing as that, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's polygonal Human League. Just kind of moving back and forth while that's happening in the audio track. It's hard to explain how distancing I found this.
It is an effect.
Yeah, it is an effect for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So they do this, and then arm this self-destruct sequence. So it's time to blow the Triton horn.
Yes.
And get impact to let us escape.
Yeah. We do the over-the-shoulder skating section, just obliterating people's livelihoods, destroying, yeah. Plowing under whole fields.
Yeah.
You know,
wherever he happened to be.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know where he's destroying, but...
the boss fight is against the charming mermaid Tysamba. Tysamba 2 yes. is the sequel to the charming mermaid Tysamba.
Yeah. Pretty similar to the last impact fight, but faster.
Yes. Faster, you know. Doesn't rely on projectiles as much, so it's a lot more like blocking, a lot more opportunistic hits as they approach.
Yes. Yeah. So we return to Zazentown. And follow Benkai's advice to check in with Kihachi, the collector, who is a Kappa, who lives in the pond at the center of town.
Yes, we're looking for that miracle item that the guy dropped.
Yes. Right? Yeah. And of course, Kappa's got it.
Of course, yeah. The Kappa says, like, hey, I will give it to you, but you have to bring me my favorite food. This is presented as a mystery, but you can just talk to townspeople and say, oh, that Kappa, that fool loves cucumbers.
Fucking gross.
You ever see somebody just chomp on a cucumber?
I have, and it grosses me out. Like, I don't like cucumber in real life, but I've seen somebody like just sit down and eat a cucumber like it's food,
like a hand fruit. Yeah,
yeah.
I would be less upset if I saw somebody bite into an onion.
I really, really don't like the flavor of cucumber.
No,
or the texture. Or the idea of eating it like a carrot, like Bugs Bunny. But he's a Kappa. He's a monster.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he gets up to. He's not for our world.
No.
You know, this is like criticizing Mothman's diet.
You know? Like, it's not my place. It's
yeah, Mothman can eat whatever he wants. As far as I'm concerned, he's earned it.
That's all I know. Yeah.
So it's cucumber, and the priest's son knows where to get cucumber. Yes. It's not the store.
No.
The priest tells you that his son is up by the sacred, I'm not even going to try it.
The sacred fire of Mount Nyoigatake.
Yeah, Nyoigatake. Yeah. But we need to train our super jumps in a warehouse in order to get there in Bison. This is running into the, you know, go clear out the basement. And once you get there, I got bad news about the power supply thing. Like, there is a lot of people directing you to people, in this.
In this section, most egregious.
Specifically. Yeah. And this is the stuff when I talk about how I would like this game a little bit more if it were stage based, mm-hmm. this is what you would lose.
Yes.
You would go to the dungeons. You'd maybe have a hub town where you talk to people for narrative and for upgrades.
Yeah.
But I don't think that the actual overworld sections of this bring very much at all.
Yeah,
it reminds me a little bit of the most common criticism about like Witcher 3. You know, like I don't really understand what this is adding to this other than length, and it's already a short game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm not complaining about the length at all. It's just this stuff feels real tasky.
Yeah,
to me,
fuck man, structure it like Bionic Commando.
Yeah. Yeah, that would, the way earlier when I mentioned like Super Mario World, mm-hmm. you know, is a thing. Like, give me an overland map that goes between these stages.
Yeah.
You know, and then you still have that sense of going all over Japan, but you're not just walking, you know, Japan isn't just a big empty field.
Yeah.
With a guy at the other end telling you to go back to the start.
It's what people were demanding. They had 3D, so they wanted big space.
Yeah.
And that's why you don't give people what they want all the time.
100%. You know, we were wrong.
Yeah,
And it's not unique to this game at all. Like Zelda, you know, the Mac Daddy of these games also has big, dumb, empty spaces.
Yeah, and still has a huge halo for putting them in there, even though it's big, dumb, empty spaces.
Yeah, that's the worst part of the game is crossing those areas.
Yeah.
People like it because the music is good.
Uh-huh. You know?
But yeah, same thing with this, I imagine. Like, you know, the music mm-hmm. probably does a lot of rounding up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anything from the 90s, basically. I am ready to make that assumption about.
We go to this locked building. We use the key that we have, and the trainer says that he's only going to train somebody with rectangular eyebrows and a round head.
Yes. So that's Sasuke.
Yep.
And we get this mini game. We're just jumping up these platforms around a tall pillar. This felt janky to me. Mm-hmm. Like, this was like, generally the platforming is pretty good in this. Not an awful lot of like, oh, I phased through that thing. Like, I absolutely should have fallen through. I absolutely should not have fallen through that. that could also be a consequence of emulation. I am not sure. I had a rough time with this. And by rough time, I mean, I had to try it like 2-3 times.
Yeah. It weirdly ends up being the hardest thing in the game, when it doesn't feel like it should be. Like, I had a similar experience to that.
Yeah.
So we have the power. He can jump high, and we can jump this high wall, near the sacred fire.
He's got his high jump is a little jetpack. Like, he's got rocket feet.
He was trained to have that.
Yeah.
We can now go meet the sun. He wants $800 for the cucumber that he grew, and he's not going to budge on it.
Yeah.
You know,
because it's a quality cucumber.
Yeah, it's a real good cuke.
You got to know the value of what you're selling.
The right? Cheapest food there is. But again, money is not, what am I spending money on?
Yeah.
You know, so you give him the money, or you have to, sometimes you have to go grind, you know, these things. We get this, the Kappa gives you the miracle snow, item. And now we can go to the stone circle in the north and get up into space for the end game, basically.
Get up there to, you know, Kyushu, which is, you know, floating around, and we get into the gorgeous musical castle, which is their headquarters, right?
Yes.
And this is a big dungeon. Like, this is fun. You use all of your magical abilities. Like, it has most of the enemies that you've encountered before. There are lots of new platforming gimmicks here, like, you know, like fan,
it's like Sen's Fortress.
Yeah.
Like, there's lots of like actual traps.
Yeah.
That go on in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is fun. I wish more of the abilities weren't keys.
Yes.
You know, like, this basically, but like, it's still, this is a good dungeon. The dungeons in this, I think, are generally good. Mm-hmm. Like, they're pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and like, some of them are like, oh, you just like big waves or like mechanical stage approximations of waves, you know, and like the Japanese woodcut style kind of deal.
Which is cute.
Charismatic. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Partway through, this is so big, there's a town partway through, a little town. Yeah. Transformed Sogen town there.
Yeah.
And Omitsu, who got kidnapped by this, is at the cafe.
Yeah.
The wise man is also here.
Yeah, the wise man is present. And turns out he is the one who gave the Peach Mountain gang the robots and the instant stage beam in exchange for a muscle car poster and 5 car magazines. This is a, everybody, you know, just does like a, like, oh, are you kidding me kind of thing.
Yeah.
In Japanese, this is pornography. He traded away the fate of Japan for hentai.
Yeah. There is a storied stereotype of like an old man. Yeah. Old man who, loves, see the guy who cannot wait to get Bulma's panties. Dragon Ball,
Master Roshi. Yes.
Yeah. Master Roshi, getting it for 5 car magazines is way funnier.
Uh-huh.
Car magazine is a funnier thing.
Yep. Like,
a muscle, dude, you got a line on a car magazine. Like, that's so much funnier than porn. Of this, like, it's not relying on the stereotype, and that's why it's funny. Like,
yeah,
it's subverting a thing on accident.
It's also very funny that it's a muscle car poster, because it's like, people can like what they like, and there's a certain,
who had pictures of cars up on his wall, like posters of cars.
Yeah. Like, you can appreciate cars like sculpture, like, hey, that thing looks real cool or whatever, but like, it's a picture of a car. It doesn't go fast. It doesn't go at all.
It's an amazing thing. Like, every once in a while you step into a garage, you know, and it's like, oh shit. Like, oh, dartboard. That's cool. Okay. There's a very fancy tool, but oh no, there's a picture of a car. Here's another poster with a car with a lady on it. Here's just a poster of a lady. Here's all the ladies lined up from the Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd poster with the sand up their assholes. I stepped into my partner's friend's boyfriend's awful life.
Uh-huh.
What do I do?
Like, oh no, guys, I found masculinity.
Yeah, it fucking sucks. I'm in the sack pack now. This blows.
So this got a laugh out of me.
Yes.
Just because it was, I love five car magazines. Like, I think that's legitimately funny.
Yeah. He's furious, though, because he made this deal and they still blew up his house.
Yeah.
So he's going to give us what we need to proceed and kick their asses. He upgrades our weapons to the golden versions, do more damage, but it's basically, it doesn't count. It's just, it's the end of the game. Barely makes a difference.
They've run out of particularly like good escalations at this point in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
The second half of the castle is harder. It's a lot of the same things, but the way they do this is have smaller spaces, which the camera does not work for.
Like,
you know, if people are screaming this throughout this when we're talking about these big anonymous spaces, I understand that like 3D cameras require a degree of that. You know, it doesn't change the experience. I understand if it was a necessity. When they got rid of that and made more interesting smaller spaces, it doesn't really work.
No.
We didn't really talk about this when we started. This is not a game where you control the camera. This is a game where the camera just kind of like, you can center it, make it look forward, but you don't have free range of it.
So you can you hold down the R button and then you like press the C stick. You always want to press down to zoom out because it gives you a better view. But like, it's not granular control. Like it's moving it like at 60 degree, like, so like 60 degree
big swings
is what it is.
I had this kludged onto an Xbox controller. We talked about this in the dispatch, so it might have been counterintuitive to me, and that's why I didn't end up doing that. That's on me, that's on the game, but it's not a traditional game where you're controlling the camera as you go. Is, you know, my point. So like, when you end up in these small spaces, the camera is going to be on AI mode and going to do its best, and a lot of times that's kind of frustrating.
It's remarkable that like throughout the entire game so far the camera had not been an issue. You know,
but like, it's because we're in gigantic outdoor, even the indoor spaces are auditoriums.
They're indoor spaces are pretty big. In the previous dungeons, like, not a problem because the world was designed to accommodate it. Here though is where like, you know, it waits until the final dungeon to be like a real like pain in the ass problem.
It's a trade-off because they wanted to have a more condensed space. We eventually get through this doing just, you know, Mystical Ninja 64 shit. You reach the main hall where Danson and Lily swear they're going to make you into diehard fans of theirs, and they do a musical number in English at you. They sing a song.
It's catchy, it's fun.
And
it works on Ibisamaru. Like, he's like, oh my gosh, guys, I'm so sorry, I'm a diehard fan.
Pretty cute. You know, our idiot pervert friend liked it.
This was cover. Of course, it was a ruse. They were activating the self-destruct sequence so they could run away, while the chorus was going. So we summon Impact and then do the skating until we reach outer space for this two-phase final boss fight.
So the first one is up against Great Peach Mountain Battleship Belbera. We had to shoot all of the shit on the outside of the ship while dealing with the little peach fighter ships that come out until eventually it opens up and we can shoot the pit, hit the weak point.
You know, just it's a big like mothership kind of deal. Once that is done, we have to deal with their final mech, the Fairy of Love and Dreams de Etoile. Which I think it like of the water, but also sounds like of the toilet.
It does sound like of the toilet.
This is a humanoid, but it has a tail instead of legs, so it's kind of like a mermaid deal. I found this tough to block. Of the starlight. Okay.
Is that true? Maybe not. It's actually, I think it might be of the. Lumiere de Etoile is of the starlight. And Lumiere. It's the fairy of love and dreams is what it is. The de Etoile is duplicating of the. Of love and dreams.
Fine.
It's a little confusing. I thought it was words too, but or water at first, but
English? It says canvas?
Canvas would make sense as well.
It's kind of
confusing. What that is.
De Etoile is canvas. So the fairy who you know uses love and dreams as its canvas. Okay. Language, everybody.
Yeah. It's weird that Lumiere de Etoile doesn't mean canvas. It means like of the stars.
Yeah.
it looks like. I get the, according to Google.
Yeah, I don't know French.
Yeah. Yeah. I do not know that language.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one another one of these impact boss fights. Has a variety of moves, does this somersault attack, can summon meteors to hit you, like a very long string of meteors, but like not a problem at this point.
Yeah, no. This is not too hard. It goes on too long for me, but it's the final boss, so it's it's more excusable here, I think.
Yeah.
You eventually beat it. They swear that they're going to keep coming back as long as they have the instant stage beam, so impact blasts them further into space.
Yeah,
it's this Yara's problem. Mm-hmm. We get back to Earth and everybody celebrates. Mm-hmm. We forgot that Kyushu and Umitsu are still in space, but they fall down and burn on reentry.
Yeah.
It's lands, dark.
It just falls back where it should.
Yeah.
And there's a crowd of women charging at them. And you can tell that they're angry, you know, because you can see what they can't see. Goemon and Ibisumaru think, hey, they're charging because they have suddenly grown to appreciate our handsome.
It's a hard day's night. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're actually, once they get within earshot, they can hear they're angry that they don't get to see Danson anymore. They thought that Danson was handsome.
Yeah, they liked it. They actually they wanted Japan to be taken over by the stage. By the Human League. And then we get the credits. Each character gets a little scene, and Ibisumaru, true to his form, takes a picture of a lady and then shrinks down so he can slither under her dress like a fucking leech. And fucking is very lucky wild. He doesn't get stomped on and just squished.
You know he wants that. That's his endgame, okay?
I mean, terminally stomped on. This is the 90s when people did not want things they found sexually attractive to kill them. That's new. That's internet. That now, Lady Maria did that.
Oh, so you're saying that stomp porn, it didn't happen in the 90s.
Stomp porn that would literally kill you. Like, people didn't want to die. Now everybody wants to die. They're like, hey, why won't she slash my neck? Yeah, but he's actually doing it in the thing. I'm saying if little Ibisumaru got stepped on, if he's a human, he got stepped on. Sure. Mm-hmm. Boner city. But as a little guy, I think he'd die.
Someone as committed to the form is definitely going to go overboard. I'm not saying he's a smart man.
Yeah. I'll take it further and say he's a pretty stupid man. Yeah. But yeah, he's I would like him to get stepped on for doing upskirts.
Yes.
That's no good.
We can agree there.
Yeah. Upskirts. Yeah. No good.
Maybe her skirt was haunted.
Maybe it was haunted, and that's how he saw it. Maybe her pussy was haunted. Maybe before that, it was just a void. He had to make sure it was, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. That is Mystical Ninja starring Goemon. About a 7 out of 10 is a 7 out of 10 has ever been.
A real 7 out of 10 that confounds me a lot, in a way that I'm sure frustrates some people. I promise people who are frustrated by this, I am being honest and, sincere. Like, I'm trying.
Yeah, yeah.
As best I can. I'm not being willfully obtuse about this stuff. It felt a lot like 8 hours of a joke I didn't get, which is a tough ask for the narrative half of a game. Like, the mechanical part of it was fun, and there were things I did find charming, right? Like, charming the non-transferable currency. Like, I'm in a giant pool table. Oh, I'm riding a gigantic sushi. Like, stuff like that is charming. Mm-hmm. I that's fun variety, and it's novel.
Yeah.
And I can't deny that. There's so much of the dialogue that had like a surreal character to it, but not in a way that amused me. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's just going to vary for you.
You know what's really funny? Like, a thing that came to mind while I was playing this, it didn't shake out because you didn't like dislike this as much as I disliked the game I'm going to mention.
Oh, yeah. But I had this comparison too.
Oh, yeah. Brave Fencer Musashi. Yeah.
Yes. And honestly, the difference is probably exclusively me having a lot of nostalgia for that.
Yeah.
Right. And, like,
same here.
Yeah, exactly. it's a confounding thing, right? From a critical perspective, because there's nothing to talk about with it. Mm-hmm. When you talk about something you're nostalgic for, you're like, man, I'm really nostalgic for this. Like, regardless of its qualities, in terms of design or writing or anything, I'm just nostalgic for its general stees.
Yeah.
Somebody's way to interact with that is limited to, like, yes, I had that experience. No, I didn't.
Right. Right.
I think part of my reaction to like charm and nostalgia as signifiers for games is that they're impossible to interact with.
Yeah. You know? If you don't have them, I mean, we said this in the Jack 2 episode, but it's like, hey, I can't appreciate this like you do because I can't share your nostalgia.
Yeah.
I can tell my story with this, you know, this being my first, you know, experience with something as Japanese as this, you know, yeah. Like, and that is something that somebody can understand or whatever, but on a beat by beat, like I cannot justify every instance of every particular thing that I like about this, because like I said earlier, it's like a warm blanket, right?
Yeah, it's not something to discuss.
Yeah,
and that's not your fault or the game's fault or anything, or anybody who mm-hmm. likes this, or Christian's fault. Yeah. You know, for doing it, there's no fault. Mm-hmm. And me figuring out I'm not at fault. You mm-hmm. know, it was harder for me to forgive myself than it is for me to understand people liking it, because I have yeah. things I dislike arbitrarily too. Mm-hmm. I think I just, and this is a personal problem, I get stymied when I can't. Like I feel, you know, like our job is to do that, mm-hmm. and it's harder to do it, you know, something like this. I can see this game engendering, you know, being a lot of people's like low key favorite 7 out of 10, because mm-hmm. it has a lot of idiosyncrasies, idiosyncraticness mm-hmm. To it that people can just kind of like, aw, mm-hmm. you know, look at it, it's trying. You know, there's yeah. a lot of that I can imagine this engendering. If you don't have that though, it ends up being similar to like other games that we've done where we've had a nostalgia difference where you've come away from it and been like, I feel nothing about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's the closest thing this does to me mm-hmm. is I was like a little bewildered, had a mild amount of fun in my hands. Mm-hmm. And then it spurred me to do a really interesting research tip. And that's it. You know, yeah. That is the value I extracted from this. And I don't yeah. think I'm capable of getting much more.
Yeah.
From it.
And just to think that's summing up the aesthetics and the vibe of it, like, and that is an asset in its favor, right?
Yeah.
Something that is not in its favor is, you know, playing this and thinking like, no, this like the move to 3D was not necessarily, you know, as additive, right?
Yes.
I don't think I would ever play this again, you know, ever is a strong word or whatever, but like I would be more, you know, I think that I have not just another playthrough of the SNES one in me, but like, oh, I could just play that again. There's a fan translation of the one that came out before mm-hmm. the Legend of the Mystical Ninja that we got that I still haven't played yet. I would absolutely love to play that. And, you know, just thinking about in comparison, you know, comparing the two, like it is damning that a lot of the things that this does, you know, could have been done in a 2D, you know,
yeah.
or the, you know, just like the weird, like 2D with moving up and down, almost like Brawler kind of style that the SNES one has. Like that would have been more fun to play, and then throw the presentational stuff on top of that.
I mean, I'm going to throw out an incendiary bomb here. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a lot like Mega Man Legends. Which is another game that doesn't.
You say that's incendiary and you say that like it's damning, but that is a huge mark in its favor for a lot of people. I understand what you're saying by it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying it as a general qualitative thing. I'm saying as games that did not do 3D
yes.
very well, but get by on like charm and tone.
Yeah.
Like the things that people love about Mega Man Legends, there are a couple of sickos who are like, yeah, this control scheme rocks. I love circle strafing around every single enemy for the entire length of the game.
Yeah.
Like there are people who like that. I'm not talking to those people. Mm-hmm. I don't have enough in common with those people. I'm saying the people who are just like, yeah, I don't care about it being a, you know, controlling bad. Mm-hmm. Like I just liked being in that town with that music and going into little shops and stuff like that. Like that's what the type of game this is.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and similar to Mega Man Legends, when we did that, you were a lot warmer on that than I was. I don't have a nostalgia for that. I played that mm-hmm. a little bit when I was younger, but I didn't fall head over heels. I played at the wrong time or whatever. So I couldn't look back at that and be like, yeah, mm-hmm. fuck yes. You know, Mega Man Legends. I love being in this town, man. That music, mm-hmm. it brings me back. It's so quaint.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
God, it's cozy. The coziness is fucking killing me. I can't. Well, I mean,
yeah,
you know, let's just call it what it is. When mm-hmm. people talk about a lot of these little villages, that's a reasonable adjective mm-hmm. for what they're describing that they like. I know cozy is a frustrating word.
Yes.
But like, yeah, that, like I can't have that because I didn't have it. It's the same thing. I can't have somebody else's nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. It's a really good thesis for a really good use case for an example of like finding clarity on that specific aspect of why certain games that are like, you know, just really objectively like pretty mid, end up being really warmly regarded, you know, because of that, like a little bit of quirk and hitting at the right time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all right.
Mm-hmm. That's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goes down smooth.
Yeah. It was not a chore to play. If you're listening to this and you are a non-straight, non-white, non-cis person, and you have a project you'd like us to shout out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Include pronouns and pronunciation. As I proved in this episode, I'm a master at pronunciation, but we all need a little help every once in a while. So, you know, please just forgive me. It is just a thing. That is me. Doing something this episode, we're probably not going to do this very often. You know, we just don't have anything. We're going to do an update. So I want to direct people back. Mateus, friend of the show, whose band we talked about, one of our first highlights.
Yeah, yeah.
The Cosmic Neighborhood. Their band has some new songs coming out. They have new stuff going on. They've got some animations they're working on and everything. Just kind of being a more refined project. So same project, doing a little check-in with them. If you'd like to check them out, they're at thecosmicneighborhood.bandcamp.com.
Nice.
Yeah. And yeah, it's cool. It's worth checking out. Yeah.
Fun. For sure. Like a bossa nova inspired, but yes. With like an edge, like in like poppy, like hooky kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's neat. Yeah, it's super neat stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah. If you have things to say about these episodes, the time, if you have things to say about this month's games, Mystical Ninja 64, Dragon Quest 4, or Cruelty Squad, write in by August 15th at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yeah. If you have thoughts about September's games, which are the Pokemon Trading Card Game, Castlevania Aria of Sorrow, or Doom Eternal, write in by September the 15th. Regardless of which month you're writing in, please, if you have thoughts about multiple games, write them in as multiple responses. That just makes things easier for us.
We'd appreciate it. Everybody's going to get those episodes except for the last one of the month. So Cruelty Squad and Doom Eternal, those are premium episodes. Everybody gets the generalities, but patrons at $5 and up get the full episodes as well as the entire backlog, as well as bonus episodes of Abject Suffering, Bonfires I Chat, Unfilmable. We try to make your $5 go a long way if we can.
Yeah. If you've already done that or you cannot do that, an additional free thing you can do is leave a rating or review and your podcast directory of choice. Make sure you're subscribed. Get these get these new episodes when they come. And last but not least, we would like to thank Gwen, our producer, who I envy going through the soundtrack to find banger tracks to put into this episode.
Yeah, Gwen will have fun editing this. Big thanks to Gwen. Gwen's band, the Trash Sound Conglomerate, just had a vinyl record put out. If you go to trashsoundconglomerate.bandcamp.com, buy one. Buy yourself a vinyl. I bought one. It's with absolute transparency. The genre of music is not something that I'm usually like crazy about. There's some songs of theirs I think are really good. Some of it is, I'm sure, is good. It's just not a genre I'm that into. But I still wanted to have a vinyl because my friend put out a vinyl.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool.
That is a cool and rare thing to have happen.
Yeah. I just think it's cool.
I just think they're neat.
Yeah. So do that. We appreciate you. And what should they watch out for until next time?
Let's see here. Watch out for the exploitative practices of the plasma donation business. There we go.
Watch out for Abyssimaru creeping around the ground looking up you.
Yeah, buy a cat to keep your Abyssimaru.
God, I would love to watch Abyssimaru just get... Jessica would one-shot Abyssimaru.